This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Terps are down by one. And Gillespie looks to inbound. There it goes to Queen. Queen will drive in against Morton. Queen with a shot off the glass. Got it! And the Pelicans have won it! At the buzzer on a shot! Oh my goodness! By Derrick Queen! 72-71! And we're heading to San Francisco! It's about time! Wow! How about that? Man, oh man, oh man.
Johnny and Naki on the call Sunday in Seattle is heard right here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980. The head coach of Maryland is Kevin Willard. He's back with us. All right, take us inside the huddle with 3.7 seconds left. We've heard, you know, your explanation. Did you really just look around and say, who wants to take the last shot?
Yeah, Kev. I mean, sometimes it's interesting. I have 4 guys that have never played in an NCAA tournament game. And, you know, to be in that situation, you know, sometimes you have to read body language. You have to kind of see how guys are playing throughout the whole game. And I told the guys, I'm not losing another buzzer beater. I said, I've had enough. I said, so we have our chance now. I said, we haven't had a chance in the last 4 games that we've lost because of buzzer beaters. I said, now it's our time. And I said, everybody take a deep breath. I said, who wants the ball? And I looked around, and Derek, he just said, give me the M&F ball. And everyone kind of looked at me and kind of said, yep, give him the ball. And I said, all right, let's go out there and do it. Like, no messing around. Let's go out there. I don't want any of that. Nothing fancy there, big fella. Just go out there and just get a bucket. And he looked at me and said, I got you. And that was it.
If, just hypothetically, if nobody had stepped up, if he hadn't stepped up and said it, what would you have run?
Somebody.
Oh, come on. What was in your mind before he stepped up and said, give me the MF ball?
Well, I have a play card that has, on the back, I have, there's like, it's 6 scenarios. And they've been the same plays, really, for the whole year. So I kind of knew that depending on what side of the floor we call timeout on is usually how I'll run a play. And, you know, because I think we were a little bit shocked that the guy made the shot, Selwyn was bringing the ball up on the right side of the floor. So when we called timeout, my original thought process was to give it to Rodney because Rodney's really good going left and taking a step back jumper, which I thought we had plenty of time for. But once Derek said that he wanted it and the way he said it and the way those guys reacted to him, it almost like it gave them the confidence. It was just a no-brainer.
I thought it was funny when he said he had never hit a game winner before. And you said, well, I wouldn't have given you the last shot. But he's still a great option. And by the way, getting him the ball where you got him the ball, we've watched all season long. I mean, him in the middle of the floor at the free throw line or free throw line extended is such a comfortable spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I knew that they had the transfer from Purdue guarding him. I forget his name, number 25.
Yeah.
And he's a heck of a defender. But at the end of the day, Derek's a legit 7 foot now. And Heidi, I think, is like 6'7". It was just a kind of simple thing. Just try to get downhill, and he's either going to get fouled or he's going to get a good shot at the bucket.
You know, I noticed something about you because I've only watched the play about 100 times at this point. You watched the final possession standing from the very end of your bench, not anywhere near your seat or the coaching box or midcourt. Why that spot, that angle to watch the final play?
I didn't want to. Two reasons. I want to make sure Selton and Derek did what they were supposed to do on the baseline. The play is designed for Selton to go over top of Derek and then Derek to go and then Juju pinned down. So I just wanted to make sure that Selton went over top. And then in that situation, I didn't want to be in Jacoby's way or vision. I just wanted Jacoby to focus on the play. So for me being down there, I was able to help Selton and Derek kind of just in that situation, you know, although we've run that play and they know the play, just to give them a little bit more confidence and guidance.
I want to get to the defensive possession before that in a moment, but after the three by Lake, your team looked very prepared. No timeout, you had one left, but 6.1 seconds left. The ball comes in, Selton takes it across half court, calls your last timeout. Was that an end of game situation that you've practiced?
Yeah, I would. It happened pretty quick, but they took the shot. Earlier than I thought they did. If they had made that shot with 3 seconds or
you would have called.
I would have called timeout immediately. But you have so many more plays. At least I do. I have so many more plays in my playbook from a half court standpoint than I do a full court. And I think it's easier to defend a team full court than it is in the half court.
Interesting. We are talking to Kevin Willard. So the defensive possession before it, the three from Lake, you had a foul to give. What was the plan defensively? Because you had a huddle. They had called the timeout with 12 seconds.
So we talked about fouling, and really my mistake was, you know, I talked mostly with Rodney and Jacoby because we were going to come out and play zone. We had played zone the prior possession and worked really good that we got them to call a timeout. We defended their stuff really well. And so I talked mostly to, Rodney and Jacoby thinking that if they run a zipper play and get the ball up above the 3-point line, we were going to foul. We didn't want to foul below the 3-point line because kids nowadays are so smart that they, you know, if you reach in below, they're going to go up and they're going to try to do the NBA thing and get a foul. So when they went right to the post on Selton, you know, we didn't want a foul right there. It just below the 3-point line.
Yeah.
Nico has
with Clifford backing him down.
Well, he also has 7,000 underneath out of bounds plays.
Right.
And it's easier to get a three on an underneath out of bounds play than it is on a sideline out of bounds play. So below the 3-point line, if we fouled it, it would have went to an underneath out of bounds play. And I've never seen a guy have more underneath out of bounds play than they had. So that's kind of why we talked about fouling above the 3-point line, but it never got there. They just went right into the post.
God, that is so interesting. Just the idea that the scout is so deep that you know he's got so many underneath his basket inbounds plays, it's easier to get a three where you lose on a three, and if you foul him there, the ball goes to the baseline as an inbound spot rather than to the sideline. We're talking to Kevin Willard. Real quickly on that last, you know, possession, you had played. Why did you play more zone? You know, in watching you, a lot of your zone turns into man during the possession itself as the shot clock winds down. Sometimes it's a matchup. Why did you play more zone in this game? Was it what were the reasons?
Colorado State, we counted the night we beat Grand Canyon. We watched film that night, and we counted in the game against Memphis, and Memphis did a good job of pressuring them. We counted 32 different sets that they had run, or 32 different options out of their sets. And to try to prepare for all that and do all that, you know, one of the things you can do with zone a little bit is at least it takes them out of their full playbook. And that's why we played a little bit more zone. It wasn't effective, but at least we didn't have to guard all their stuff.
Do you think that one of the things I was going to ask you about, specific to not only Sunday, but even Friday against Grand Canyon, and certainly the semifinal in the Big Ten tournament against Michigan, is the number of offensive rebounds you guys have been giving up. What are the issues that have led to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, we talked about that as a team yesterday. We have switched a little bit more than, you know, Michigan makes you switch a little bit more. Obviously Colorado, we had to switch, you know, 1 through 4. And I think a little bit is that we had some bad mismatches on our switches. We have guards, you know, we had guards on Wolf. We had guards on, some of their big guys against Colorado State. And it's become a little bit of an issue where it's been bad game planning by me, by getting our guards switched on to some bigger guys. So, you know, we can't do that against Florida. Florida's size is just so big. So we're going to go back to doing a little bit what we did in the beginning of the year and just stay a little bit more at home.
First half of the game Sunday, Neat Clifford, who, by the way, is an incredible player.
He's really good.
Yeah. He threw a blatant elbow that connected with Jordan Geronimo. Why didn't they look at it? When did you find out about it? Take me through that situation.
I told Jordan, I said, man, you gotta lay on the floor a little bit more longer. Yeah, I said, you gotta sell that. I saw it at halftime. Like, you know, again, they didn't review it, which was, we had a really good reffing crew. It was one of the best three guys that you could put on a game. And they came up to me at halftime and said, you know, we saw it, we missed it, we apologize. And you know what, Kevin, sometimes they just miss stuff. You know, the good thing was, you know, Jordan wasn't hurt, and, you know, it's one of those plays. Sometimes refs miss stuff, and it's not a big deal.
Yeah, it just was a critical moment because I think it was a 3 or 5 point game. You get 2 free throws on the ball. During the regular season, people probably would have been talking about a flagrant 2, but it more likely than not would have been a flagrant 1. I was just curious as to when you found out and whether or not the conversation.
You know, the instant replay at home is so much different. You know, you see that stuff automatically.
Like, sure.
You know, our video guys do such a good job at home that after every play, it's up on the Jumbotron. You know, at the NCAA tournament, they don't do that. So you don't get to see it as quickly as you do during the regular season, which is a little bit of a disadvantage.
All right. First time for you in the Sweet 16, first time for the program in 9 years. How do you balance, you know, for your team, the excitement of the finish, of advancing to the Sweet 16, but also not treating it like, you know, Thursday night ends up becoming icing on the cake?
No, I mean, I let them, you know, yesterday was a travel day. You know, we went from, I've been on the West Coast so long, I think I should pay taxes on the West Coast.
You mean you didn't have to bus it home and then hitchhike back out?
No, we traveled to San Fran yesterday, and I gave the guys, yesterday was a rinse day for me. Like, I let them enjoy it. We did a lot of media. The guys did a lot of media. We watched film. We did a walkthrough on Florida. But for the most part, I just gave them yesterday to kind of enjoy the win. I wanted them to embrace it. I want them to, you know, this group has been phenomenal coach and so much fun to coach. I think you have to celebrate your success. But at the same time today, I told them last night, I'm like, guys, we're getting back up today, and they were all business. You know, they understood it. I think they appreciated the fact that, you know, I didn't grind them yesterday, and I just gave them a day to be kids and enjoy winning a buzzer beater in March Madness.
All right, you know, I got to ask you this: are you staying at Maryland or going?
Yeah, you know what, I've had over the last week, I know I've said some things that have raised people's eyes, but, you know, Maryland's been great. We're in a perfect shape. I missed a radio show today, and everybody thinks I missed a radio show today because I overslept. I'm on West Coast time now. Everything that my concerns have been about the job, and that was my whole point of my press conference, and, you know, maybe my jersey came out of me not in the greatest way, was, you know, I want to make this program the best, and I think when you have an opportunity to do it, you have to you have to take advantage of the opportunity, Kevin. And, you know, obviously losing the athletic director has been a little bit of a, I wouldn't say, it's been a little hard, to be honest with you, just because, you know, I wasn't expecting Damon to leave and go to SMU. But I've been working with Brian Ullman and everyone in the athletic department, and they've been great, and they understood my concerns and what I want. And again, I don't want monumental things. I just want, you know, this program to be the best it can be. And I think I'm not asking for that much.
So are you staying?
As of right now, I'm staying, Kev. Yes.
As of right now, but are you going to get the things that, are you comfortable right now saying that you're going to get the things you need and you are going to be at Maryland as the head coach next year and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's, you know, Brian Ullman has been phenomenal. You know, he's actually the first guy that's come up to me. One of my issues is I just didn't have a great...
Tell everybody who Brian is.
Brian's it's the CEO. I'm not sure what his title is. He's in the athletic department, and he's way up there. There's a lot of people up there, Kev.
Okay, just so everybody knows. Yeah.
But he's been great. He's the first guy that's actually sat down with me, talked to me, and really found out what my concerns and what I really wanted, you know, because it's not a contractual thing for me. It's more of a program thing for me. And Brian and I are on the same page. He has been awesome. He has put a lot of what I've felt over the last 3 years about the program. I think he's finally starting to understand where I want this program to go. And that's all that matters to me. I want this, you know, what Lefty did, what Gary did, what Mark did, what I want to try to do is elevate this program to the best. It's what our fans want. It's what my donors want. They talk about it all the time. It's what I want. It's what my expectations are. And when you're at a place like Maryland, there's just certain things that need to be done to be at the top of college basketball. And I can tell you that I don't know if Brian's trying to get the AD job, but Brian's been phenomenal.
You know, last week, and I think we all talked about it, you know, anybody that does what I do, we talked about your comments. I personally love them for a lot of different reasons. I'm not going to go into them now. And it was some of the jersey and you coming out, which, you know, some of us like. But I'm curious to some of the specifics you mentioned, but were they the biggies? Like right now, the top two or three things that you really need to make Maryland what you want Maryland to be and what people like me want Maryland to be, the ability to compete at the highest levels of the sport, what are those things?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, you know, obviously we're you know, the fans don't really understand this, but we're entering into a whole new era of profit sharing, of literally schools paying players. You know, I think the Big Ten and the SEC have done a good job of trying to move away from collectives and donors paying to schools paying. And, you know, with a football program, with a really good women's program, with a phenomenal lacrosse soccer program, you know, I don't want to take away from those programs, but at the same time, in men's basketball, you know, there's schools out there that are going to be able to do things that we can't do. So, I don't want someone telling me, especially since I don't have an athletic director, I don't want someone telling me that we're going to do it. I want to put in my contract. I don't want people making decisions about my program who aren't involved in my program that make decisions that affect my staff's life, my life, but doesn't affect their life. So those are big ones for me because, you know, I live it, breathe it every single day. And again, you know, I want this place to be the best. As you know, this fan base expects that. But it, you know, to be perfectly honest, it hasn't been treated that way for a long time. And my goal is to get it there.
Yeah, I think that's really important what Kevin said for all the Maryland fans listening, because I think the perception from a lot of us and from a lot of the fans is that Maryland is a very high-level program, and certainly from a history and tradition standpoint, it's true. But we're in a different era of, you know, of players getting paid. And your answer there specifically was, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, about the share of the revenue that goes to basketball.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again, this, the funny thing is if you brought any basketball coach on right now that's in the Big Ten, the SEC, Big 12, really, I think those three schools, I think the ACC is a little bit unique because they have a much diversified basketball football mix. But most of all of us are sitting there saying, okay, wait a second. Like, it's nice that you're saying this is what we're getting, but then at the end of the day, are we getting that? And, you know, the transfer portal is crazy. There's kids asking for $2-3 million right now. And the money has exploded crazy because we have no guardrails. We have no rules. It's been as badly implemented of a rule as ever in any sport. And kids, our agents, are taking advantage of it. You know, every player has an agent. Every agent is calling every school and saying, hey, you know, I got $1.2 million here. Give me $1.4 and we're gone. And, you know, if you don't have this profit share in the rev, you're not going to be able to compete. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and yet you did a phenomenal job last offseason because there were opportunities for some of those players to take more money elsewhere, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I do think, again, and that's kind of where I stand a little bit on the transfer portal. You know, we talked to a bunch of guys yesterday when the portal opened. You know, it's like, all right, we'll be there. We'll be in the same range. But, you know, we also want guys that want to be at Maryland, that want to, that fit what we're trying to do, that are still great kids, that have great work ethics, that want to be around the staff, that wants to get you better. So that's still a big part of the sell for me, is that I just don't want to go out there and just say, here's $2 million, and just bring someone in that doesn't fit our culture, that doesn't fit what we're building, that doesn't fit with the guys that we have returning. So it is a big part of that. And the guys that came last year were all into that. They, you know, they wanted to experience what they're experiencing right now. So there is a balance, but unfortunately, agents have really just taken over the sport.
All right. How do you beat Florida Thursday night?
Well, they have a young man named Walter Clayton who is as good a guard as I've seen in a long time. I mean, he's shoots 38% from three and takes almost 50% of them off the dribble, off pick and rolls. You know, we're going to switch up our pick and roll coverage. We have to. We just can't play the way we've been playing. And we have to do a much better job on the glass. We have to do a better job on the defensive glass and transition defense. They're a really good team. They're ranked second in the country for a reason. It's going to be a great test for us.
Best of luck. Appreciate you doing this. You know how much I enjoy our conversations. Thursday night will be a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people are hoping, and it sounds like it will be the first of your many Sweet 16s and beyond at the University of Maryland.
I appreciate it, Kev. I'm glad I didn't oversleep for you so everyone didn't get in a frenzy.
Appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kev.
Kevin Willard, everybody, head coach at Maryland. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com, or free and live on the Odyssey app.